1 Samuel 8, 1-9, the message, rejecting God as the king. When Samuel got to be an old man...
You remember Samuel, right? He was the son of Hannah, who was given to be raised in the temple by Eli, and he heard God calling him during the night, and he finally answered.
When Samuel got to be an old man, he set his sons up as judges in Israel.
You remember what the judges were, right? Once the people of Israel were established in the Promised Land, God raised up judges to help them defeat the neighboring countries. Also, they settled disputes among the people, and probably lots of other things, too.
His firstborn son was named Joel, the name of his second, Abijah.
Remember?
Really? Again?
No, actually, I don't know anything about Joel and Abijah.
They were assigned duty in Beersheba, but his sons didn't take after him. They were out for what they could get for themselves, taking bribes, corrupting justice.
What? Samuel was such a good guy. God called him and everything. Why were his sons such nincompoops?
I really don't know. I don't think the Bible tells us, but it's not like it's an unfamiliar theme. And it's not like we're perfect either. Anyway, you're not the only one who's bothered by it. Fed up, all of the elders of Israel got together and confronted Samuel at Ramah. They presented their case. Look, you're an old man, and your sons aren't following in your footsteps. Here's what we want you to do. Appoint a king to rule us, just like everybody else.
A king? Weren't the judges good enough? Couldn't they just vote in some new judges or something?
Samuel wasn't happy either. The Bible says when Samuel heard their demand, give us a king to rule us, he was crushed. How awful. Samuel prayed to God. God answered Samuel, go ahead and do what they're asking. They're not rejecting you. They've rejected me as their king.
Yeah, right. God was their king. Well, actually, he was better than a king. He was their God. Why did they want somebody else?
Good question. Anyway, God answered Samuel, go ahead and do what they're asking. They are not rejecting you. They rejected me as their king. From the day I brought them out to Egypt until this very day, they've been behaving like this, leaving me for other gods. And now they're doing it to you. So let them have their own way, but warn them of what they're in for. Tell them the way kings operate, just what they're likely to get from a king.
What did God mean, warn them of what they're in for? What would happen?
I think part of it would be that a king would tax them and make their sons be part of an army. But there's probably more to it than that. I'm thinking when people want to do things their own way instead of God's way, that something is not going to go well.
Good point.
So, Seth and Micah did the reading for us, and it, I thought we did a good job of personalizing the story, putting ourselves into Samuel's position. And a lot of times when we ascribe certain characteristics to God, what we're accomplishing then is we're actually setting benchmarks for ourselves. We're setting goals of characteristics that we also want to take on. But it doesn't always make us better. That's the problem. One of the characteristics that we ascribe to God and we read about in the Bible is jealousy. We read that God is a jealous God, and we talk about that. What does that mean? How could this be a positive thing? Well, jealousy isn't necessarily something that we can control. When we see something that we like, when we see somebody who has a situation that's better than ours, as mature, thoughtful people, we can think to be thoughtful about it. We can remember that our situation is also good. We can think that the other person has made different choices. We can think that the benefits that they're experiencing aren't actually making them any happier. We can rationalize all of those things, but the jealousy that comes is pretty natural. But when we act on our jealousy, that's when it becomes a problem. When we allow that jealousy to interfere with relationships, then we start to suffer from it as well. So then what does it look like when God is jealous? How does God behave this way? This, I think, is a perfect story to communicate to that point. Because jealousy is really a problem of selfishness. When we are jealous, when we act out of our jealousy, we are really only thinking about ourselves, about what we want, what we think we deserve. And so when we hear stories about God's jealousy being enacted, this, I think, becomes the model for our jealousy, especially in this particular story. So God has taken a special group of people. He's led them out of slavery in Egypt. He's guided them through the wilderness. He's helped them establish their own place to live, their own legal ruling system. He's kept them safe from neighboring peoples. And so the people turn to God for their decision-making, but there's a kink in the system. The legal form, the government system that they've set up is only as good as the people implementing it, which is the same problem with our political systems. And the people wanted there to be goodness and justice in the land, and yet the judges failed. And it seemed like the judges would probably always fail. If we can't trust the sons of Samuel, if we can't trust the sons of the high priest, who can we trust? And they looked around, and they saw that the kingdoms all around them had kings. They had people that they had on the top of their political system that everybody could be proud of, everybody could celebrate, everybody could idolize. But the Jews didn't have that. The people of Israel didn't have that. And they wanted to be like that. If you go to a music concert, if you go to a sporting event, you start to feel a certain kind of energy in that space. That energy feels like adoration and love. When we see our heroes performing really well, when we see the people that we want to be like, and they look good, and they sound good, and they perform well, and they overcome their adversaries, that, it feels good to be in that kind of space. People pay a lot of money just to be in the company of their heroes. And so it can feel really good to have political heroes too. Many of you know that. Many of you have gotten sucked into that at different times of your life. And so the people of Israel want that. They want that feeling. They want the shiny thing that their neighboring kingdoms have. And so they go to Samuel. They don't ask him to replace the judges. They don't ask him to correct and reprimand his sons. They ask him to start an entirely new political system. And so Samuel sees this as a rejection of God, but it's pretty clear, even from God's words later on, that Samuel sees this as his own rejection, that he himself is being rejected, that his family is being rejected, his parenting is being rejected, his leadership is being rejected. And so in this story, he doesn't come out and say it, but Samuel is jealous. Samuel is jealous of other leaders who don't have to put up with this. Samuel is jealous of the authority that a king will be given when he is given none. But then God reassures him. No, they haven't rejected you. They haven't rejected your leadership. They haven't rejected your wisdom. They have rejected mine. And so then God doesn't say, and now I will punish them for it. And now they will suffer the consequences of my wrath and jealousy. No, you see, God had a plan. God had a plan to rescue these people from slavery. God had a plan to guide them through a time of testing and discernment in the wilderness. God had a plan to establish them in a kingdom of their own. And God had a plan to walk with them as a people. But they didn't like that plan. They wanted a different plan. They wanted to take the plan in a different direction. And so God could have been jealous. God was jealous. And God could have acted on that. But the way that God acted is the way that we too need to act in the lives of the people around us. You see, God adjusted his plan. The plan was for God to walk with them forever. That was the promise God made as long as they followed him. And yet, the people didn't want to walk with God. And so God made a new plan. A new plan that he would send his son into the world to rescue these people from their sin and all the people of the world. And the way that God was going to bring about that plan was through the very thing that the people were asking for. See, when Jesus walked this earth, there were times when people would call out to him by his name, by his title. They would also call him by his lineage. Blind man once called out to Jesus, "Jesus, son of David." Jesus was part of the royal line. Jesus inherited the royal line from those kings, which is especially incredible when we think that God didn't want them to have a king. Right? God says, listen, give them a king. They'll deal with the consequences of taxation, increased military pressure, a forced labor of everyone in the palace, of uneven wealth. They're going to deal with that. But they are also going to deal with my plan coming to fruition through that line. God gave them a king, and God gave them the king afterwards. So, God is jealous, but God's kind of jealousy is different than ours. God adjusts his plan to fit the will of the people, and the will of the people benefit from God's love regardless of the jealousy that he feels. Amen. So, we've got things a little bit in a different order today, and I'm going to invite the kids up to the front for the children's feature, and I'm just going to sort of give a visual representation of this story. And I think it'll help the adults as well. So, kids, come on up here. Is it on? There we go. All right. Okay, so there are a few kids coming out of the nursery. And we'll get started. So Sebastian is going to help me with this one. We practiced something ahead of time. Here they come. All right. So listen, we at our house for a long time we have been me and my wife Anna, so Sebastian's mom and dad. We have been figuring out how to raise our kids. When you're a kid, you think, oh, mom and dad just know what they're doing. Well, sometimes we have to figure it out. So when I was still a new dad and Sebastian was a new kid, sometimes we would sort of get into trouble with each other. Right, Sebastian? Okay, so, and I thought of a kind of example that I think helps to explain what I was talking about before. So sometimes there would be something in the room, and I didn't want Sebastian to have it. So then, of course, Sebastian wanted to have it. So, Sebastian, can you get the bottle that I've got there? So we have a kind of a prop. So here, let's say that there's a bottle here, and I don't want a little kid to have it. Can you think of why I want a little kid to hold this little pop bottle that I have here? Why? It might break, right? I don't want my little kids to hurt themselves with broken glass. What were you going to say, Lauren? Right. Yeah, we don't want that bottle to break. We don't want him to drop it. Maybe it would break like that. Maybe there's still some pop in there, so maybe we don't want him to have all of that sugar. Maybe I want to bring this back to the bottle store, and I think he's going to lose it, and I want the money instead. I don't know. So then he would grab it because it's shiny and because it's cool and because maybe he's thirsty. So then what would happen is I would grab it, and I would say, "No, Sebastian, give it back to me." And, of course, when I do that, then he just pulls really hard. Now, this is kind of dangerous, isn't it? Because one of us has to stop pulling, right? Or else we're just going to be pulling really hard forever and ever. But what's going to happen if one of us all of a sudden stops pulling? Yeah? Right. We might cut our hands. If we squeeze it too hard, we could break it and cut our hands like that. What else might happen if one of us stops pulling? Yes, Felicity. It would break like that. Because it's glass, yeah. Right, it's not very strong material. So what might happen is, if all of a sudden I let go, Sebastian will fall back and he will hurt himself. And maybe he will drop the glass and it will break. But sometimes that was the only choice because he's pulling so hard. See, he's still pulling really hard. Now, so then what should I do as the daddy who wants all good things to happen to my son? Should I just walk away? I should just let go and walk away even though he's crying? Is that what your parents would do? No, of course not. So what would happen is I would sometimes have to let go, and then he would fall down, but even as he was falling down, I was already running to him because this is my kid, and he's crying. He's not crying because I hurt him. He's crying because he was pulling too hard, and he wouldn't let go, and then this is the only thing that was left. But I run to him because I'm the dad. I run to him, and I help him to feel better, and then I hold him, and maybe he learns his lesson about not pulling things too hard, and maybe he won't take it next time, but still, no matter what, I am his dad, and I run to him, and I will protect him, even if what's going to happen is from his own choices. Right? Okay. Thank you, Sebastian. Okay. Thanks, you. Thanks, guys.